The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
February 13th, 2011. The reason why I say I hope is because this show is being pre-recorded. Today, the date of recording is actually January 31st. And the reason why we're doing that is because I should be, as this program airs, on my way back from Tom Brown's, Tracker Tom Brown Jr.'s standard survival course. It's a week-long course up in Santa Cruz, California. Boy, am I looking forward to that. Tom Brown Jr. and I are going to be doing a lot of things together, and he's just a legend, author of 17 books. If you saw the movie The Hunted with Benicio del Toro and Tommy Lee Jones, the Tommy Lee Jones character was based on Tom, and Tom and I share a great many views, and he's a great guy, and we're obviously moving our focus now on different kinds of more urgent preparedness now as the troubles of the world get more obvious and more kind of in your face. But we're going right to our guest tonight. We will not be taking calls, obviously, because it's pre-recorded. Our guest tonight is one of the best friends anybody could ever ask to have in their life. She's an old and dear friend. She's a former six-term congresswoman from Georgia with a couple of gaps in there that were kind of fun. She was the 2008 presidential nominee of the Green Party in the United States. Our guest tonight is a former congresswoman, Cynthia McKinney, who is somewhere in a time zone like 10 hours after New York. I don't know if she wants to tell us where she is, but this is an early wake-up call for you. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much, Mike. And, you know, as I said to you earlier, I have to love you, darling.
Yes, you do. Are you somewhere near what's happening in Egypt?
I am. Yes, I am. I'm in United Arab Emirates.
All right. Well, listen, I mean, a good journalist won't pass an opportunity like this. I'm going to shut up. You served on the House International Relations Committee. You have many, many years of experience. You've been around the world. You want to talk to us about what's happening in Egypt and what you think is important?
Well, the most immediate memories that I have of time having been spent in Egypt was during the Viva Palestina USA convoy that was led by George Galloway, and that was in 2009. And we were trying to get into Gaza through the Rafah crossing, and the Egyptian government was just not having any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we began to make our presence felt. The first way that we made our presence felt was by just talking to the citizens in which we came into contact. It was very, very clear that the sentiments and the policies of the Egyptian government bore no relation at all to the feeling on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then some of us took that to the airwaves in the interviews with the press that we had. And I distinctly remember saying that if the people of Egypt lived in a democracy, we would be in Gaza right now.
Mm.
It was one of the worst experiences that I had, because it was clear that individuals within the governmental structure or the bureaucratic structure had been given carte blanche to treat us any kind of way because we were daring to challenge Israeli policy.
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies the problem. One of the problems, of course, there are many problems, but one of the problems, and that is that the Egyptian government represented every sentiment except that of the Egyptian people. And it kind of harkens to our own United States government that has failed to provide peace, education, quality, decent education, medical care, health care, traditional governmental services that people expect, like infrastructure, a kind of a cogent energy policy, the things that you've been talking about, Mike,
right.
Agriculture policy. When we look at the entire panoply of what the United States government represents itself to be and what it has actually delivered to the American people, there's a huge gap.
You know, I think that that's kind of what...
And at some point, our own governmental representatives are going to have to take stock of what they're doing.
Exactly.
In contravention of what the desires and values are of the American people.
And I think that as I'm watching events unfold in Egypt now, again for the audience, this is January 31st, a pre-recorded show. Hosni Mubarak has refused to leave, and every day that he does not leave, I am more concerned. Let's find the right word. I am, you know, I'm more convinced that an anti-Israeli government will come to power in Egypt, because you can hear, at least what we can hear in the States from mainstream media and all the sources that I scour, is that more stringent pro-Islamist anti-Israeli sentiment is coming to the surface with every day that Mubarak doesn't leave. Do you get that feel?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Look at what the Egyptian government has been reduced to.
Yes.
Now, everyone knows that the wall, the separation wall, has been deemed illegal under international law. And so what does Hosni Mubarak do? He builds a wall between Egypt and Palestine. I mean, it just absolutely makes no sense.
No.
And when we finally were given our 24 hours to go and deliver our medical supplies into Gaza, there were people standing at the crossing waiting to get through on both sides. The crossing normally was closed, and people just waited there for days and weeks in order to get through. That meant that whether it was medical supplies or didn't matter what it was, if a family trying to reunite all of their family members, I mean, the toll, the human toll that Egyptian government put not only on its people, but the people of Palestine was insufferable. And why was this done? For the $1 billion or so of U.S. aid that was given every year to Egypt that was, judging by the immense poverty there, siphoned off in what one would call leakage with quotation marks, that never reached the people.
You know, you touched on something earlier on in one of your comments that's really been hitting home for me. I see every world government, and I see every, if you will, power broker, you know, the powers that be, the Bilderbergers, whoever they are, the ones who make those decisions, kind of really caught on the horns of their own dilemma right now, because these food riots are a direct result of quantitative easing too. That's the move by the Federal Reserve. And the fact that we've passed kind of peak everything. Human industrial civilization, now it's becoming more apparent by the day, is collapsing. And so now the Hillary Clintons got to go out and they got to find somebody who's going to promise the Egyptian people what? A car? An American lifestyle? It's not going to happen. And the other part about this is the contagion that you can almost feel palpably from the region that there's a sense of people coming alive. Do you get that?
Well, yes. And I immediately think about the last speech of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. when he opened up his remarks by saying that he was happy to be alive in the 20th century, at that particular moment in the 20th century, because people all over the world were standing up and saying, I want to be free. And here we are now in the 21st century, and people are standing up and saying, we want to be free. Now, let me just also draw an interesting parallel, because I also have to take the audience to the ongoing events in Haiti, where all manner of pressure is being put on the current government there of Aristide ally René Préval to concede to the will of the elites, to concede to Hillary and Bill Clinton's fiefdom,
right,
and put an entertainer in as the head of state. And this also is in direct opposition to the expressed will of the people by their votes. The candidate who won the election is Jude Celestin. And I have watched with great interest as the hyperbole around the Haitian election unfolded about who was going to be a U.S. puppet and all of this. And these people then, because René Préval refused to give in, because the 12 candidates who opposed Jude Celestin in the election refused to concede and sent the message to Jude that he must not bend before the almighty empire of the United States, in very much the same way that the Haitians in 1804 refused to bend before Napoleon Bonaparte and all of the elites who supported his empire. We're almost seeing the same playbook or the same play being right. run in Egypt as is now being run in Haiti. Because what did the elites do in the face of intransigence from the Haitian people and the Haitian electoral offices? They rushed baby Doc Duvalier
right.
back from France so that he could assume a position. And now the International Crisis Group, which I understand is financed by George Soros.
Oh, boy.
From the offices of the International Crisis Group, rushes El Baradei to get in front of the street action. And if we look at the Tea Party origins, we see that Sarah Palin was rushed in front of the Tea Party in order to get in front of that particular political street action.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break here. We have some pauses and some tempos we got to do here. And this is the slot in the show where, Cynthia, you know I'm in this band, right, called New White Trash?
Yes.
You've already heard some of the songs. This is the part of the show where we always play one of our new white trash songs that's appropriate. So this is
yes.
one of the first songs the band did. This is a song called Say a Prayer for the New White Trash, and you don't have to be white to be a member. Say a Prayer for. Here it is.
Okay.
Anything that all the crowds y'all are using is target practice. You're so white trash. Top down and you're cruising for a reason. All the signs on the ground y'all are using is target practice. You're so white trash. We're the people of the revolution. We're the people of the evolution. Say hello to
Say a Prayer for the New White Trash. I think we ought to be saying a prayer for all of us right about now. You can find the album. It's a double CD, double wide, just officially released this month. You can find us at newwhitetrash.com. You can download the songs. You can listen to them all for free. Download them for $11.11. Get the CD for $22.22. And we got something even nicer for people who'd like to help us out a little more. Cynthia, what'd you think?
Well, of course, you know, I like anything you do, Mike. And all I think about is the day that we were in Berlin, and we saw a restaurant
called White Trash.
And you and I have been dreaming about starting our own little kind of jip joint. And there it was already. Well, ours was supposed to be the Colored Cafe.
That's correct.
And, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that on the radio, huh?
Well, that's all right. Hey, I've even said shit on here before. It's okay.
But I just love the relationship I have with you because we can talk about anything, and we understand where we're, you know, each other's coming from, so we don't have to be, how can I say, careful about our words.
Exactly.
Because we know what's in our heart.
We have walked a few. I've known you since 1999. I was introduced to you by Al Giordano. You remember Al of Narco News? And
absolutely.
And, you know, we have walked through so much. We walked through all of Bush Cheney together. And, you know, I just have to salute you. You know, for all at From the Wilderness back in the day, we had 60 members of Congress as subscribers to FDW. But there are only two that I've ever met that I've really been taken to on a level that stand apart. One, of course, is you, and the other is Ron Paul. We've got about two minutes left before a station break here. And we got so many things to talk about. We got El Baradei to talk about. I want to come back to that. But you want to talk about Ron Paul for a couple minutes before we go to station break?
Yeah. I think we need to pay very close attention to his stint now and as he comes to lead the subcommittee that on the Banking mm-hmm. and Financial Services Committee that has to deal with the Federal Reserve. And we can see, you know, basically, you know, what kind of stuff he's made of. And I'm really anxious to see some of the things that he's put forward, the ideas that he's put forward. You know, I'm anxious to see it happen. I'd like to see a full audit, not of the Federal Reserve. And then after that, let's find out where that money went. Let's find out who those counterparties were.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, let's turn the money-making operation over to the American people.
We got a lot of work to do, don't we?
Oh, gosh, yes.
I just look at this, and I look at everything else, and I'm just thinking, oh, my God, there's so much to do in so little time. Okay, we got about a minute before station break. I think one of the things, let me plant this in your head, and this crystallized for me when you were talking about El Baradei. When it first started in Egypt, when it was first obvious to me, and that was the first day of street protests that the Mubarak regime was going to go. I mean, I've been tracking this stuff for 30 years. I know how this stuff kind of plays. And this is playing remarkably like the Shah of Iran's departure from Iran in 1979. But on the first day, I thought, well, thank God El Baradei's there. But now I'm thinking every day that passes and Mubarak doesn't leave, the less I like him. And I'm wondering how that's going to play. Do you think there are any possible others than Mohammed al-Baradei? What options are really available, Cynthia? We got about a minute before station break.
Well,
we can pick up after.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, there's always indigenous, locally grown leadership, and it's always there. They don't need... Egyptians don't need a hand-picked person to come and rescue them from the clutches of U.S. policy.
Mm-hmm. That's probably a great place to leave it. I'm getting a signal from the control room. It's time for our station break at the bottom of the hour. Our guest tonight on tonight's pre-recorded show is Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, former last 2008 Green Party presidential candidate who is just one of the smartest people in the world. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll see you right after this.
Drink up the red wine, paint it a fine line. From your cool kiss running to meet mine. Turn on a thin dime.
Thank you. This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down or you're just curious, be sure to listen in Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Down Mexico way.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Don't miss out on Dr. Michio Kaku's weekly show, Explorations. Dr. Kaku is the only scientist with his own nationally syndicated radio show. Explorations is the program that explains complex physics with an accessible approach. So take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss topics ranging from space exploration to stem cell research.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Misfits. Yeah, there's a lot of those running around. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. Our guest tonight is my dear friend, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney of Georgia. Cynthia, there's another Georgian, Jimmy Carter, who has had a lot to do with the politics there in the Middle East. And when we were going into break, we were talking about that, and you're going to pick up on this theme, that there's lots of homegrown leaders in Egypt. But what I want to know is, what would the mechanics be? What should they be doing? Because Jimmy Carter's been going around the world monitoring elections forever. Obviously, a provisional government would have to be formed immediately and in place when Mubarak left. But then what happens after that? How would they go about it if it was done right?
Well, if it were done right, that homegrown leadership would be introduced first to the international community by the international media.
Okay.
And the Egyptian people themselves would be the ones to select their leadership. But, of course, that's not the way it normally happens.
Right.
The way it normally happens is just the opposite of that, that a tremendous media public relations effort is undertaken to introduce a personality to the Egyptian people, that personality having already been vetted by the powers that be.
Right.
And that's basically the way politics is done in the United States as well. In fact, the only reason I, as you very well know, that I ended up running for Congress when I did was because I saw backroom politics taking place in my own home state of Georgia, where they were selecting who was going to be the next member of Congress before the people even had a chance to vote.
Yeah. And you know, we live in a world now where corporations are, you know, unrestricted in the amount of money they can give candidates. We got a great guest on, which would have been last week now. I'm all confused with all these pre-recorded shows. But Tom Lindsay of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, who has got one of the most unique challenges, saying that nothing can usurp or overrule local home rule. And the corporations are backing down. They're stopping Nestle and Coca-Cola from stealing the water from Mount Shasta. The city of Pittsburgh has used this to stop shale gas fracking in the Marcellus Shale project. This is a time for innovation, and I see that the powers that be, I don't think they got as much control as they do now.
If you just look at the organization that picked up El Baradei after he left the International Atomic Energy Commission, you just look at those names that are there at the International Crisis Group. Of course, I've had my run-ins with that particular organization or individuals that were associated with that organization as I was trying to ferret out the truth about the murder of two sitting democratically elected presidents on the African continent, mm-hmm. which, you know, was the spark of what we now know as the Rwanda genocide. And behind all of that lay a U.S. effort at regime change on the African continent, which never gets mentioned. But there were individuals who I became to know, and that was my first interaction with the International Crisis Group, which now, of course, has grown into an organization that receives a ton of foundation money, government money, and is a veritable who's who of people who have been in service to the, I guess the terminology is the elites. You know, they get parked there when they finished one stint and before they begin another. And if you look at who they have on international television talking about, and of course I don't say the Middle East, I say Western Asia or I say Africa, because technically that's what that area is. How in the world could anybody listen to Tony Blair now?
Right.
He's a war criminal.
Right.
And I mean, yet he is the authoritative source and the authoritative voice that we, the internationally attentive public, are supposed to listen to. So I know that people who listen to your show are not tricked or fooled or drawn into the melodrama that
what it is, too.
These people would love to have us drawn into, but rather are clear-minded, analytical observers of not only the international scene, but the domestic one for the United States as well.
Let's talk about Africa for a minute, because that was really cool that you set me up for a nice segue there. The food riots, which began in, I believe, Tunisia, and then went to Algeria, then to Egypt, and they sprouted in Yemen and Jordan and Syria and Saudi Arabia, according to a couple of sources that have been shut down. But now they're also spreading, according to reports that I read today on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, which I know you check every day, that it's spread to Sudan and it's starting to move down through the continent of Africa. And I juxtapose that with a story that I had on the World News Desk at CollapseNet a couple of days ago, which says that AFRICOM, that's the new command in the United States military, is looking like it's going to locate its headquarters on the African continent. Now, you served on both International Relations and the Armed Services Committee, so you want to give us a little tour of Africa right now?
Well, this is a very interesting development, and when events began to manifest in Tunisia, the first thing that I thought about was, oh, yeah, okay, this is AFRICOM at work. Mm-hmm. Of course, we know that with respect to Iran, there was a $400 million budgetary line item that facilitated what the news organizations were able to broadcast, and then decreasingly so from Iran during and after their election period. Mm-hmm. And $400 million can buy a lot of street action. Mm-hmm. And I've
only
seen
take
it
about
with
5,000 in South Central. Sorry.
just
give me 5,000. Send me to South Central. I mean, okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But you're absolutely right. And then if we look at, you remember we had the huge USS Harlan turned around when it was trying to dock in Haiti, mm-hmm, by 60 thugs who were paid by the CIA to, you know, stand up and shout, expletives at the ship. And so it turned around. So it doesn't take much to provide political theater that then justifies a certain action. And so I think that there are people who are very seriously engaged now in trying to ferret out or tease out the extent to which AFRICOM or, you know, foreign intrigue, mm-hmm, is at play. And I think that's a very important role. But the fact of the matter is that when people are dominated by a government that doesn't much represent them, we can expect to see the kind of disaffection and outrage that we've seen from our safe vantage point of the television screen in Tunisia and all of these other places. So I don't want to denigrate homegrown, I shouldn't even say homegrown because that harkens back to Jane Harmon.
But my God. Yeah.
Legitimate domestic outrage that is fueled by very real dissatisfaction with, right, government policy that is at odds with the people it is supposed to serve.
I guess the way
that
I would sum this up now is that what I'm feeling from the coverage I see of Egypt and from the Egyptian people is that when this first started, all they wanted was for Hosni Mubarak to leave. But now I'm seeing, I think, and I'm feeling their level of expectations and aspirations rise, which is a good thing. They should rise. And that's where I'm really encouraged by what I see going on. Africa concerns me because, nations like Saudi Arabia and many other nations are buying up enormous tracts of African land to grow food to feed their people, and that food's going to get grown while people in Africa are starving and watching it shipped overseas to those with money. And I'm seeing some signs, and I'm not up as up on it as I used to be, that there's increasing violence in Central Africa. And I'm worried about, maybe a continental or, who knows, maybe a global eruption of sentiment here.
Well, the African continent is saddled by these same kinds of leaders who are in the hip pocket of the West as well. You have a tradition in Ethiopia that was very well respected because the Ethiopians were never enslaved, never colonized. They were able to beat back that colonial era.
Machine.
And here you've got the current leader turning his country into a destination for torture and rendition at the behest of the Americans.
Yeah.
You've got the Ethiopian army that ought to be utilizing its ability to organize massively to provide some kind of agricultural innovation and infrastructure, if it should exist at all, which is a whole nother issue, for the people of Ethiopia. And yet you've got them invading Somalia to suppress the Muslim population of Somalia. And we have to look also at Cote d'Ivoire right now,
mm-hmm.
where the international press has made Laurent Gbagbo into a boogeyman. But the fact of the matter is no one is talking about the out-and-out fraud that took place in the election. Now, of course, you know, we are familiar with fraud in our elections because that's how George W. Bush became president of the United States.
I will never,
well, unlike
ever...
in the United States,
I'll never, ever, ever... I'll never forget, Cynthia,
when I
came to film you, when we first met in person for my video Truth and Lies in 9/11, and you had this sign behind your desk. Do you remember what it said? Commander and Thief. I love it. Commander and Thief, and that went right in the video. This woman has just amazing, she just has inspired me for a long time, for a lot of reasons.
Oh, Mike, I have to tell you that... in that film, I said that a criminal cabal had come to Washington, D.C. Man, you know, in the back of my sort of the recesses of my political conscience, I regretted saying that so much. Because I knew that that was just going to open me up for everything, right?
And that's exactly what you got, too.
It was true.
It's exactly what you got.
It was so true.
I mean, I remember walking with you in the tunnels down to the House floor or the anteroom, the chamber, or the cloakroom.
Yes.
That's what they call it. And I remember watching how you were treated by the Capitol Hill police on more than one occasion. We're not going to go back to all that old stuff, but you have just endured so much. I just okay. Listen, we got about 10 minutes left. I don't want to waste it all walking down memory lane. But we've been through some stuff together. And, so now we're down to the last 10 minutes, and there's an interesting audience that we have here. I have to do the demographic for this show. It's now abundantly clear that peak oil is real. It's now abundantly clear that human industrial civilization is falling apart. The European economic crisis continues. You know, everything is breaking down at once. Bob Dylan wrote a song called Everything is Broken. It's a great song. Now let's leave all the politics aside, just as people. Take as much time as you want. We have about 8-9 minutes left. To talk about where we as a species should be going, what we should be doing, what we should be thinking, realizing that we only have like a few short months before this really gets out of hand. What do you think?
Well, Mike, it's hard for me to leave the politics behind because the political machinations of certain structures or individuals, actually it always boils down to certain individuals, is able to manipulate people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important things that I try to always preach and practice is that we cannot fall for the okey-doke again.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest okey-doke that plagues politics in the United States? it's the politics of hate. And, you know, I did a bike ride across the United States. And when I was in one particular state, I felt so fortunate to have overheard a conversation of people that, you know, folks like Janet Napolitano would say, we have to beware of. These are white men who are armed and who just hate what's going on in our country right now. And I approached them because I've always wanted to, I mean, you know, first of all, being from the South, I understand, you know, sort of the whole racial thing and how race has been used to divide people in this country. So I wanted to plant a seed with this group of men that was having a political discussion that is not sufficient for them to look at me and say where I am on the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do that, do a little bit more of that, then they will not, how can I say, cast aside potential allies. And so whether it's someone who prays to Allah or if it's someone who speaks with a Spanish accent,
mm-hmm.
or if it's someone who speaks with a Southern accent, we have to pull together, and we've got to do different things. We've got to explore a greater, higher consciousness. That consciousness has got to be intellectual. It's
yes.
got to be spiritual.
Yes.
It's got to encompass all that we are as human beings. Now, some practical things like what you're doing. I subscribe to CollapseNet. I read the articles. And my son, who is in law school, is now into food in a big way, and not just eating it, but growing it. Because
I'm at
we can't
Berlin,
even
yeah.
trust our government to provide safe food for us anymore. When the FDA says it's okay for us to eat cloned meat, then we have to start questioning the FDA. When the FDA, the Federal Drug Food and Drug Administration, say to us that it's okay for us to take certain medications that kill people,
side effects may include sudden death.
They want to tighten up on the natural vitamins and minerals that help people and cure people. Then we have a problem with this.
Yes, we do.
So we've got to get back to basics, and we've got to communicate with one another on the most fundamental level, and that is heart to heart and soul to soul.
And close to home. You know, close to where you live. And
and that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So now I've got compost in my backyard. I've got a garden in my backyard. I'm going to learn how to, you know, I haven't been in a kitchen. You can tell I go to the kitchen to eat, but I don't go to the kitchen to cook. Well, I'm going to learn how to can. I'm going to learn how to do all of these things in order to, survive. I understand, well, you were the one who talked to me early on about, you know, what are the basic necessities? You got to have access, easy access to transportation. You got to have easy access to clean water. And so then you got to locate yourself in such an environment where you can get out if you have to in a hurry, and you can have access to water if you need to from natural sources.
Right.
And so I'm looking at that, and I'd love to be able to get off grid. They just make it so darn difficult,
you know,
here.
I was
now that I'm learning more about energy, I know that I just have to figure out every way possible to decrease my demand while I figure out how to get off the grid altogether.
I've been engaging in a conspiracy with Tom Brown Jr. about you. You ready for this? Tom Brown Jr. is like he's the most famous and accomplished survival wilderness instructor in the world, and it's not just living in the woods. He teaches he has a great many courses. Loyal following's been at it for years. I'm going up to his class, and we were conspiring that we want to get you up to one of his courses.
Man, I need to because this is information that people must have.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody thinks that FEMA is going to come to their rescue, just remember 2005 and Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. So we cannot rely on a bankrupt government to come to our rescue. This is something that we're going to have to do human being to human being and human being to Mother Earth.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. You know, if FEMA comes to anybody's aid now with food, you know that they're going to be coming with freeze-dried seafood dinners taken from the Gulf since Deepwater Horizon went down, because nobody else will buy the food. You know, Cynthia, I want to thank
that's
you
right.
for I want to thank you for mentioning CollapseNet. We've just passed 1,020 listings in our totally free Lighthouse directory. This is not a yellow pages with stuff that's useless. These are all handpicked for just about anything you can think of. You can find us on the World News Desk, and we're now in 50. We have members in 59 countries and 30. But we got a lot going on there. It's CollapseNet.com. Cynthia, we got about four or five minutes left at the most. You know, I think everybody who's been following you for a long time, you're like me. We are both blessed with amazingly loyal fan bases. And I would get my butt kicked if I didn't ask you, what are you planning for the future? What's coming for Cynthia McKinney?
Well, you know, over the course of 12 years in Congress and trying to stick to the truth and not just be a voice for the voiceless, but speak truth to power, I've amassed a tremendous amount of very, very powerful enemies. Now, I'm not their enemy, but they perceive me to be theirs.
Yes.
And due to that perception, I just think it's better for me to lay low until such time as the vision has been made clear to me as to how best to proceed. Because, you know, this has a lot to do, it's a spiritual journey that we're on.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to calculate and calibrate our steps very carefully, because we don't know where the landmines are,
no.
But we know that they've been placed before us. And those of us who, like you, you've taken such tremendous stands to benefit the people, and there's a lot of pain and suffering and sacrifice that goes with that, and people really don't understand. You know, it's not just Mike Rupert, who loves his dog named Rags, and, you know, who is now a member of a band that I still would like to be invited to play percussion with.
Oh, cool.
It's Mike Rupert, who has done a tremendous service to all of us by telling us the truth, by exposing to us the fault lines of deceit of those who control the empire, and have provided a blueprint and a roadmap for those of us who would like to take a stand, and the personal consequences that are borne by individuals who choose that route. So I've already put myself in the way of landmines, and I don't want to step on one.
No,
so for
it hurts.
The moment, I'll just keep my mouth shut.
Well, I'm blushing over all those nice things you said. Cynthia McKinney, I know everybody who listened to the show tonight and all your fans are going to be grateful to hear from you. We got you to talk about some things, crossovers. I've heard the term progressive libertarian more than once in the past few weeks, and that's something emerging. And you know what? I kind of like the ring of that. I don't know what it's going to look like, but we're all going to be here. And I, for one, want to express my deep gratitude to you for being on the planet, being where you are, getting up at 0:30 in the morning to be on this radio show from halfway around the world. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, my good friend, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you so much, Mike, for inviting me.
We'll talk to you soon, babe.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this show was pre-recorded on January 31st, 2011, because it should be airing on February 13th. I'm on my way back from Tracker Tom Brown's camp, and we'll see you next week live, hopefully, with James Howard Kunstler. Good night.